I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Simon Day. Simon Day of The Fast Show, of Brian Pern, of King Gary. It's a great chat, and you're going to hear lots of talk of there's echoes of glam and punk and new wave and post-punk and so much more. So we then touch on kind of Balearic music and the early rumblings of house. You're in for a real treat on this one. Before we get on with it, I'd just like to say thank you to Scribius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network, and thank you very much to 76 for producing this podcast. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track and you enjoy it, then when you're finished listening to this episode with Simon, go and have a look in the back catalogue, because if you like comedy and comedians talking about records, then I've recorded episodes with James Acaster, Brett Goldstein, Jade Adams. Oh gosh, there's loads. And then also there's interviews with musicians as diverse as Chuck D to James Lavelle to Mel C to the Deftones to Chic. So go and have a rummage around in the archives and see if there's anything there that tickles your fancy. I think that's it. Or I will say, if you do want to support the podcast, then there is a Patreon page that accompanies this as well. You can find out about all things related to the podcast on Off the Beat and Track podcast.com. That's not beaten, that's beat and. www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, let's get back to business. Please enjoy Off the Beat and Track podcast with Mr. Simon Day.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Right, we're recording. Sitting opposite me today, Simon Day. Hello.
Hello.
Well, I sent you a message on Instagram to see if you was up for coming on, and I kind of forgot about it, and then out of the blue I got a message saying, "Yep, I'll be up."
No, I don't. It was I don't look at the message on Instagram or Facebook, so I don't do Facebook at all. I got the message a bit late on Instagram.
Well, we're here now, and we're ready to talk records. But just quickly, I kind of got to have the conversation that everybody seems to have when you meet someone for the first time in 2020. How have you been finding the year? You've been coping all right?
Yeah, being an actor, I'm used to long periods of doing absolutely nothing. We got a puppy just before lockdown, and my kids are at the age where they didn't mind not going to school. My son swapped sport for playing Fortnite. He played Fortnite so much that when he went back to school and started doing sport again, he got about 5 injuries because his legs just been underneath the table. And he plays football for 2 teams. He's had trials and all that. And basically, he went back to school and they smashed. He got quite a bad injury because he hadn't literally. But you say, "Oh, well, let's get them out and make them walk up a hill," but you don't.
Yeah.
Because they're out. You're just on your own watching box sets and going, "This is nice." So, yeah, they're at their age where they just want to be in their room. And they go, "What do you want when you go in there?
Yeah.
What do you want? Who are you? Why are you in my room?"
Yeah, it's got to the point now where like I knock on my kids' doors now.
Oh yeah,
and it's like it's got to that age now where I have to knock just to go in a room in my own house, which is quite weird.
Tell me about it. But I do that annoying thing of knocking and going straight in.
I'll do that.
My daughter hates. The minute waits. Could have been undressing. I go, oh yeah, sorry. If I'm feeling in the mood, I go in.
Yeah. All right. We're going to kick things off. Track one. What do you regard as a song having the greatest ever intro?
I mean, it's very hard to pick one out of all these songs. And I'll probably, and it's one of those things you go back and you go, oh, of course, that.
You can have some honourable mentions, mate.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go for this one because I heard this in Deptford Market, where they used to have a record store and the guy had a big sound system. So he would play the records, the vinyl, really loud. And I was walking down Deptford High Street and he played I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross.
Oh, what a record.
She's got that amazing drum sort of beat when it comes in. It's just basically it's sort of like a drum solo, isn't it? And the brass. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to go for that. And it's a great record. You know, a lot of her stuff is really good, especially the stuff she did with, you know, your man from Chic.
No, Rogers.
In fact, that was their biggest selling album, apparently.
Yeah, that, it's that Nile Rodgers guitar, isn't it? It's just like, it's just pure disco.
It's just brilliant.
Yeah.
My Old Piano, is those songs of hers are my favourite. I can't remember the ballad, My Old Piano and Upside Down. It's a brilliant record.
Oh, what a record.
Now, I used to remember throwing myself around to that in various nightclubs.
Well, we'll get on the club in a bit later.
Probably one or, you know, there's a record by Bruce Springsteen, the ballad of something, which is all starts off with guitars and piano and maybe the Yellow Brick Road, Elton John. I'm going to go for that.
Because
I remember hearing it and getting nearer and nearer.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
To it.
It is strange that, like, generally with this question, it goes two ways. Like, guests either choose something like what you chose, which is pretty much instant, like either going to make you dance straight away, or it's just like, you know, or something like, you know, I don't know, I Fought the Law, which is just, you know, a huge instant call of arms. Or it does go the complete opposite way. It does go proggy, it does go Floyd, it does go for that long, drawn-out intro. So it's always interesting to see which one sort of people lean towards. All right, well, we're gonna kind of sort of work our way through your life, I guess, with these song choices. So for track two, Simon, I'm going to ask you the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
I was one of those weird kids, and I was always drawn to really weird records. Suicide is Painless. That got to number one. Do you remember that? And I was talking to the music journalist the other day on Twitter about Seasons in the Sun, which was another really odd, weird, you know, about suicide. But, you know, you basically listen to your parents' records or your brother's records. We were only a year apart, so we kind of had the same taste in music, although he liked T-Rex. So I was like right, and I like Slade. He went to, I went to a comprehensive, he went to a private school, and Slade are the ultimate adolescent band when all your emotion, you know, all your hormones all over the shop, your spots and girls, and Slade were just so sort of nutty, weren't they? But yeah. But the first music that affected me emotionally would be my parents, what my parents played, that would be Simon Garfunkel. And still now, I just think the combination of his voice and the arrangements and the lyrics and, I was talking to Tracy Thorne actually about From Everything But the Girl, and she was saying, we were on Twitter, we were saying that the song I'm going to choose is America by them.
That's my favourite.
There's that line where he goes, counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all gone to look for America. And she said, it makes me cry. You know, when I hear it, even now, it makes you want to cry because they're, you know, a good song like that, they're like little films, aren't they? And I didn't know anything about America, you know, anything. I didn't know what the New Jersey Turnpike was, but there's some, there's emotional pull from Simon Garfunkel records, which I think is one of the reasons they were so enormous. You know, yeah. I mean, everyone likes Bridge Over Troubled Water, which is, of course, a classic, but I love every single song they've ever done, you know.
There's, I don't know if you've seen it. I don't know if you ever kind of go down sort of like rabbit holes on YouTube watching kind of performances and stuff. But there's a performance at a kind of, whether it's some sort of induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or something for Paul Simon, but there's an American band called First Aid Kit, and they do a,
right.
They perform America for him while he's sitting there in the audience, and it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning.
Really?
These two girls just deliver this incredible version of America, and you can see like Paul Simon's bottom lips going. It's like it's a cracker. It really is. So was you always sort of exposed to music growing up? Was there records on at home?
Not so much for my parents, but I was straight into music as a kid, buying singles. My brother went on to become a DJ. My brother was a DJ, and he DJed sort of before house. He DJed at a special branch in those places in the 88, 89, and he sort of stopped and just got a proper job. He said, I'm just going to make a decision. And he said, I wish I'd stayed at it. Cold Cut, he knows all those people. The guy that did Pump Up the Volume, Chris whatever, he said, oh, your brother. Because I since met all these DJs and went, oh, your brother, I used to go and watch him in 1987 at so-and-so. So he bought, I'd go out and buy a record. I'd come back and he'd bought it in blue vinyl and red vinyl. So I just didn't buy any records.
Yeah.
And I just listened to his. And I went right through. You know, we were very lucky, our generation, because we had the punk and then we had the ska thing with the specials. We were at the right age and we were just not too old for the house thing. So I think we had a fantastic musical journey, you know, because you started off with Led Zeppelin and Free and all that. And then you suddenly, punk came along and you had all the new wave stuff. So yeah, I think it's a really good age, mine, to be exposed to these different musical genres.
Absolutely. And I think it's really weird. You said that your brother dipped out of DJing sort of 86, 87. That was literally probably the final years before DJs become superstars.
Made money. Yeah, and he sort of laughs about it, but he's got an amazing job. He's very bright. And he just said, I've got to make a decision. And he said, you know, this was before they started superstar DJs. And obviously all those people went on to be, you know, Cold Cut and blah, blah, whatever. I mean, he wasn't into the drug side of it. He would never have gone and become, you know, Ibiza and all that. That was another part of it. He was quite straight, you know. But, yeah, as you say, it went 1990, 91, 92. Suddenly it became, you know, superstar DJs and records being sold. You know, they were sold a lot of records. And, of course, they had the back in the music industry then, you know, when, you know, they actually made money out of records.
It's really interesting. I'm one of them people that likes watching the kind of old repeats of Top of the Pops on BBC4.
Yeah.
And they're around 88, 89 at the moment. And it's really interesting seeing that all of a sudden there's things like Adamski and it's just like a guy and a keyboard. And how the BBC and Top of the Pops didn't know what the fucking hell to do with that. They've just trying to like put these random dancers on there that look a bit lost and nothing to do with the artist. And they obviously
Josh.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly.
And they couldn't really have them live because they didn't really. That's why it was great when you had someone like Seal, who could really sing, and they had a star. And record companies are always trying to find a face for a movement. So they'd go drum and bass. What are we going to do? Goldie.
Yeah,
we'll have him. He can be the pinup. But, you know, Stone Roses. They don't want fake. They don't want a guy called Gerald.
Yeah,
they don't want a faceless sort of music guys in his bedroom.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know, and they're so eclectic, those Top of the Pops now, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And it feels like that time, like from 87 to maybe 90, there was a big change through acid house and hip-hop exploded and then the whole Manchester thing happened. That little kind of sort of three-year period was very, very kind of interesting for British music as well.
Yeah, it did explode and there was so much of it. And then, of course, you had what helped it was like the Paul Oakenfold thing of the remixes of Even Better Than the Real Thing, because people would go to raves and I'd go to raves and I didn't really, you know, I wasn't really into the whole sort of vocal, let there be house, all that stuff. And so I was much more, because you've been into rock music, suddenly U2 come along, oh, great, you know, and kids could get into that, you know. And then the Stone Roses, he did the Stone Roses and the Mondays and all that, and it'd be and Justin Robertson, and there was a proper crossover there. And then they were remixing anyone, people who didn't even deserve to be remixed, you know.
That was my entry point. That was all of a sudden when, like, the Mondays and the Roses come out, it was... Oh, hang on, this is guitar music to dance to. This is, you know, when Weatherall and that were all getting their hands on them records and just, you know.
Fool's Gold was such a huge record, wasn't it?
And to this day, like, I run a venue in Essex that sort of plays alternative music. And I mean, I dread to think how old Fool's Gold is. I don't want to think because it make me feel old. But, sonically, it still sounds like it's from outer space when you hear it now. It don't sound like anything else. Ah, it's absolutely wonderful. All right, well, for track three, I'm going to ask you the song that reminds you of your time at school.
I've just lost my list, but I remember the one anyway. Right, well, this is my secondary school. My primary school, you know, I'll forget that, but my secondary school... I had a really bad time at secondary school. My parents broke up, blah, blah, blah. And what I remember most, because I hated it, was basically Rollers. I used to hate them. And I remember the girls all sitting in the sort of, whatever it was called, the sort of staff room, common room bit, whatever. And they all sat there wearing all the gear. There was a record player and they listened to the tartan scarves and the flares, Bye Bye Baby by basically rolling Bye Bye Baby, because before all that was a terrible time of music when all those bands should waddy waddy mud, you know, and it was just bad rock and roll, wasn't it? Shaking Stevens. I mean, great, lovely people, I'm sure, and there was a couple of gems amongst all that stuff, but it's kind of just real proper music business, Svengali dross, you know, Chin and Chapman, all that stuff. I mean, the Sweet were good. That's not the Sweet. They were a brilliant band. And they sold 15 million records.
Yeah.
So, but basically Rollers. I just remember it. They call it an earworm now, don't they? But da, 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 feel free. So, yeah, so that I was just very unhappy at that time in my school days, and that sort of crystallised that the time, that record.
Where's that song take you now? Does it take you back there, or can you enjoy it now for what it is?
Yeah, I can enjoy it now for what it is, yeah. It's quite a clever record, actually.
Is it Frankie Valli? Did Frankie Valli write it?
Possibly.
I think Frankie Valli wrote that. Yeah, I think
Bye, baby. Yeah, it's quite a good pop song, isn't it, actually, when you think about it. So, I just remember that, Tom, when you asked me that question, rather than think of something cool and go for a cool one, you have to be careful with these lists, because you go, oh, right, I'll say Shot by Both Sides magazine. People start saying all the cool, like, what's the first record you bought? I was going to invent a cool one, you know. Oh, actually, it was Warm Leatherette, but you know, my first record wasn't cool either.
No one's first record's Warm Leatherette, and that's the thing. What's been really nice on this podcast, no one's tried to be too cool. It's like, come on, first record, it's got to be a howler. Nothing's going to be good. Like, no one was listening to John Peel when they were eight. Do you know what I mean?
No, exactly.
Like, come on. So you didn't enjoy school, Simon?
Secondary school, no. Because I'm, you know, I'm an addict. So that's when I went off. That's when I started, you know.
Did you have any idea what you wanted to be at school, though?
Yeah, I still had that dream of doing acting or something or comedy or whatever, but I didn't really get an eye to get into it. And it wasn't until much later that I did. I just sort of went out in the world and did stuff, you know, played pool and drank beer and had muck jobs, you know, until much later. Went and sort of got a lot out of life, you know, which I could draw on to do my comedy characters. Luckily, I got in at the last minute, you know.
Was you confident?
Well, at school or then?
Then.
No, not at all. You know, I was just sort of low level in addiction, gambling, fruit machines, playing pool. You know, I never got really bad. I just sort of lived, you know, had girlfriends, you know, just did jobs, worked for me, mate. I was just toddling along, really, but I was sort of thinking, what am I going to do? You know, my mates were going to university and getting proper jobs. And then 29, I started doing the stand-up. And the rest is history, as they say.
Was that like a, you know, was there a moment where you just thought, right, that's it, I'm just going to, because that's, you know, not that I've ever done it, but that must be a brave moment to go, I'm going to become a stand-up, I'm going to do it.
Vic and Bob had moved down here and they used to write above Jules Holland's studio, and my mate used to have a fireplace shop below it, and he got to know them and he said, listen, you're funny, you know, you should write something. And I said, yeah. Oh. And he helped me write it, this guy, you know, he bought the wigs and we got this really hard 20 minutes, which is all different characters, which no one was really doing then. And I did a talent night in Sid Cup, and they were judging Jim and Bob, and I didn't really know them then. I did this 20 minutes and it was just very different to what everyone else was doing then, and I won the thing and they said, smart, you know, you can come on tour with us. Literally like that. And I went from landscape gardening, well, labourer I was really, carrying paving slabs, to that. And I went straight on tour with them. I died a lot of times, but you know, that was 1,000 people in the venue. A lot of them were standing. It was 1991. Everyone was drunk, you know. It was all Madchester and Manchester. It was crazy. But after I'd done that tour, I kind of wasn't scared because you know, they just supported me and said, Tom, they don't get it, it goes over their head, you know, because it was all very north. It was a lot of northern pride in their stuff. And when they found out I was from London, they'd go, get off, you know. And I was just doing Tommy Cockles, which was kind of so quiet.
Yeah.
It didn't really. Johnny Vegas always goes, yeah, I couldn't see you. And, you know, I had a fight with the bloke. He was talking over you. I said, be quiet, you know. Yeah, but it was an amazing time to go from that to that. I was, you know.
I mean, that's a baptism of fire, isn't it? I mean, because Vic and Bob were straight up rock stars, you know, then, weren't they?
Yeah, it was just brilliant. It was such a best time of my life, really, because I had 10 years of just existing, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a brilliant time.
Okay.
It was before it was a proper job, too, so, you know.
Track 4, Simon, I'm going to ask you the first song you remember buying from a record shop, and I know it was Warm Leatherette.
It was, I've got a brand new pair of roller skates and I'll give you the key. I've been hanging around a while. And I haven't looked it up, so I don't know what it's called. I think it's called, I'm going to put the lyrics in now. It might be something like brand new pair of roller skates. Here we go. Brand New Key by Melanie.
Right.
Produced by Melanie's husband. It was 2 minutes, 26 seconds long, October 1971. And that I remember as being the first record I bought with my own money. And I gave, it was 50p, I think, maybe cheaper than that.
Can you remember where you got it?
Yeah, Blackheath Records, Blackheath Record Shop, very famous. Danny Baker was going on about it. It was right on top of the heath. And they had a box of punk singles at the front, which everyone used to nick. And we would get all our records in there. And the other one I remember buying was Physical Graffiti by Led Zeppelin on cassette. That was $4.99, and I took it back and played it on my dad's Dan Olsen sound system. And then I went down to Devon on a holiday and I had one of those little Philips tape recorders.
Yeah.
It was like play or rewind, fast forward. And that was such a great album. That I still love that album to this day. I think that's their best album.
You've mentioned punk quite a lot there. You just touched on that box of punk singles in the record shop. Like, how much of a impact did punk have on you?
Oh, a lot, definitely. But I was one of those half a punk people. You know, I remember I used to see Dr. Feelgood a lot, Johnny of the Hot Rods.
You're talking about our hometown heroes here. These are Essex's finest, mate.
Yeah, they're the best band ever, best live band ever. I'm very lucky because I haven't been to see a lot of bands. But and my brother one night came around and said, I'm going to see a concert. Do you want to come? And I was like, no. And that was the Jam and the Clash at the 100 Club. I didn't go, but I saw them a lot. I saw them four times in the Hot Rods, with and without Wilco. And I remember I went to see them once, and I had like a white shirt with safety pins, skin-tight cricket trousers, 15-hole Dr. Martens painted red, and then I had a bass and haircut. And as I say in my book, I looked like a Morris dancer. And some bloke came up and started on me. Some bloke came up on a Fred Perry and said, yeah, do you want to fight, mate? And I was like, no, you're right. And, yeah, but people forget all the energy. But I didn't really go and see a lot of punk bands, the proper punk bands. I was a bit scared of all that. I was a bit too late. I didn't go to the Roxy. I went to the Roxy 2, which was the club afterwards, because I was only 13. But the interview, that was a big moment, watching the Pistols being interviewed by Bill Grundy, you know. It was. I don't think people realise now how big that was to see that as a kid. I was literally watching telly and it came on. And when telly was just your dad sitting there with his peanuts, gin and tonic, and suddenly came on, it was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big moment. And the cynicism, you know, of Johnny Rotten. And, you know, I think that gave me quite a lot of, like, wow, you know, there's another world out there.
Yeah. That's almost that's where I was kind of going with a question, Simon, because I missed punk by a couple of years, and it's whenever there's anything on television, that Bill Grundy thing gets put on, and it still never sort of fails to lose its impact, and it still impacts now in a world where, you know, we were exposed to everything constantly, and I'm just always fascinated as to, like, how that must have resonated sitting there with your folks watching that, and, you know, that coming on.
Well, because everything was so sort of grey there, removed, and I lived in the suburbs, and the West End was, you know, I wouldn't go up the West End. Lots of kids did, you know. I was a very suburban kid, and people didn't swear on telly, and it was dull and cold and grey, you know, and nothing was geared towards kids on TV. You'd watch Top of the Pops and Monty Python, you know, and you'd watch all the comedy with your parents, but there was something about that, the way they looked, because they were so young, and something about John Lydon, his eyes, you know, the way he spoke, and that whole, you know, just his disdain for the whole setup. I think that's what really, you know, you realise that you could do what you want and think what you want, and you didn't have to just go and go to university and get a job and be whatever. I mean, not everyone sort of picked up their sort of flags from there on and went out and had a great life, but it certainly was electrifying to watch it, you know. People, because my dad would woke me up in the middle of the night to bring me down to watch some bloke landing on a gypsy moth who'd been around the world. You know, he got us up at 2 a.m. and I was like, why are we up? And it's a black and white footage of a bloke stepping off a boat, or, you know, Winston Churchill's funeral. You know, it was very much the grown-up's world then, so this was real.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember what my parents thought at the time. They didn't turn it off. I know that.
And Grundy, he's goading them. He knows what he's doing as Like, it's a cracking thing to watch. It really is.
It's a sort of a broadcaster's instinct, isn't it? He's going to make it worked very badly for him. Perhaps a few years later, he would have done okay. But I think he was drunk, wasn't he? I think that's what they say.
100%, 100%. For track 5, Simon, the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Well, again, this is virtually impossible to choose one. There's so many. Sway No Latino, My Definition of a House by DJ Hell. And I went out a lot with Express 2 and those people, and Ashley Bead, who I used to knock around with them. So their records. But I think probably the first, you know, the first lot of music that was played when I first went out in 89, 90, those records from Detroit and all that, and the American sort of gay scene that produced those records, they were such incredible records, about emotion and the way they sounded. And I'd have to go for Tears, you know, by Frankie Knuckles.
Oh, what a record.
Done by Robert Owens. I mean, the way that record sounds, again, it sounds like it could be coming out now, you know. And it was just, they were so emotional. You know, I didn't know anything about the records, where they came from. I didn't realise it was from, you know, it was from the gay scene or whatever. They were just brilliant records.
Whereabouts was clubbing for you? London?
Yeah, London. We used to go to Full Circle on Sunday lunchtime, which was out at Heathrow. And that would be all Terry Farley and those people. And, you know, then we'd go to a club on Sunday run by Nick Coleman, Sunday night, Gray's Inn Road. And I can't remember the name of it. I should remember Solaris, and Boys' Own Parties.
What a time to club.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What?
What a time to go
Milk
clubbing.
Bar we'd go to in the week, Nicky Holloway. We'd go there a lot, you know. I mean, I didn't go out every night, but I certainly, you know, that was when I was sort of drinking. So I didn't turn down a night out in those days.
Mm. What did you want from clubbing?
What I liked about it was you could be off your nut on E, dance all night and not really have to talk to anyone, because clubbing before, I used to hate clubbing. I was very shy, and you know, I used to just go to dance. I used to love dancing. I never pulled birds. I wasn't into that thing of chatting to girls. I used to want to, but I never had a girlfriend through that. What's your name? Where are you from? Really? You know, and I had these mates going, my mate there, I guarantee you, you'll get a bird's door keys within an hour and all that stuff. And it was before that came in, it was all very posy and sort of voguing, or it was violent, you know, because you know, I was always treading on people's feet too, you know. So when the whole sort of house scene came in and people started taking E and football hooligans were hugging each other, regardless of what, you know, long-term effects were, it just became a completely different landscape. And it was genuinely, you know, a very sort of emotional experience. It became all about the music and the sound of the music. And, you know, it wasn't a bad lifestyle. In those days, you take half an E and you dance all night, you know, you drink Ribena. It wasn't like you were sitting at a table, you know, drinking three bottles of Jack Daniels. Mm. And so it was just very uplifting, you know. And, I mean, obviously Monday mornings weren't brilliant, but
and then you got
they ever are.
Like where the rest of the country was at that point as well, around 88, you know, 89, that in most clubs in high streets, you'd still be wearing trousers, a shirt, and sometimes a tie just to get in them, which just
exactly
sounds bouncers, mad, and, doesn't it?
Yeah, when I was gigging, you know, all through the 90s and 2000s, you go to some places in Wales, and it would just be lager and just loads of people just dancing, listening to house music, but you know, going crazy. No, nothing druggy about it. And there were loads of people who weren't taking drugs, you know, and I'm sure that would have been fine too, but. I used to just like dancing. I do miss that sort of release of not, you know, worrying about how you look from standing around and being sort of, you know, being self-conscious. You just go in there and it was like firing a gun and you were off, you know, and suddenly it was time to go. It was 4 a.m, you know.
Do you not get that sense of expression through your other work?
Yes, yeah, I do, and I'm lucky to do my job. I being creative and doing stand up and acting, I love all that. I just, and for me, you know, I'm clean now. I went through the end of that club and then go in there. And we used to arrive and go, "Should we go?" You know, there's a time in your life when you do it and it's great, and there's a time for it to stop, you know. And I don't regret those times because I met a lot of interesting people, you know.
Okay. Track 6, favourite song from an artist from your home county?
That would be Squeeze. I grew up in Blair and Blackheath, and Squeeze were from there, and we used to see them all the time. I must have seen them 20 times. They were always playing down the pub, the Bell. We followed them at the Albany. And so I would say Squeeze, and one of my favourite songs of theirs, there's loads of them, I'll go for Goodbye Girl.
Oh,
they're just such a brilliant. I was spoiled to have them as our local band, you know, because they were so good and the songwriting and I know fairly well, and he definitely, Chris Difford was definitely a sort of influence on my writing, you know, the sort of writing sort of stories in an urban language, you know, that like up the junction, you know.
Oh.
I never thought it would happen. Me and the girl from Clapham out on the Windy Carman. It was, I could understand it. Again, they were like little stories. And Ian Dury, of course, as well. I mean, I think he's a massive influence on loads of comedians from my generation. But they were such a great live band as well. They really were.
You can't see it, but literally just to my right there is my signed set list from Squeeze last year. They're just an incredible band. I love them. And yeah. if I was to answer my own and go for the greatest intro, I think Up the Junction is an intro and a half, you know.
After I've finished, I'm going to listen to it.
Oh, it's glorious. And what an amazing song. And it hasn't got a chorus.
No.
No chorus.
There you go. Yeah. I would say we were spoiled. You know, we didn't know. Everyone goes to see the local band, don't they? And we had Squeeze. So, you know, just lucky, I suppose.
How was it growing up in Blackheath?
Oh, it's lovely, you know. It's very green, and you had Greenwich there. Lots of sense of space. And I used to walk everywhere. I never learned to drive. You know, I used to wander about and just walk about on the heath. And my childhood was very so idyllic, really. Holidays in Devon and all that. I had a very nice childhood. I can't knock it, you know. I go back there now. It's strange. I mean, there's a lot of cars there now, but was very much more like a village when we lived there. Yeah, there was a Bieber shop when I was young, growing up there. It's called a sort of poor man's Hampstead. But the trouble is, for most people, they've got to go down the old Kent Road to get there, so they don't go. But there was no tube then either. It was just an overground train.
Yeah.
So it was always cut off. And famously, the cabs would never take you home as well.
Oh, really?
Well, they would say, I'm not going to South East London, you know. Whether because people used to run away and not pay, I don't know. But, they were always reluctant to take you home. I suppose they couldn't get a job on the way back, but that was the story anyway. And not that I ever got cabs in those days. I'd get a train or night bus or walk home, you know. I mean, when you're young, you haven't got all that. I didn't have a lot of money.
For your last track, you can play DJ now. And
right.
It's the song that many may not know that you would like them to listen to.
I would like them to listen to a song called, I'll just tell you what it's called. And I'm going to, and like a lot of these bands, when they do their late night tales or they do the comments, they put four of their tracks on. I'm going to put the one track that I made, and it's by the Transit Kings, which was one of the members of The Orb, and Guy Pratt, who plays bass with Pink Floyd. And various people. He plays with. He's currently in a group with Gary Kemp and the drummer from Pink Floyd. And it's called The Last Lighthouse Keeper. And one day he said, he got me in a studio and he just said, come up with some lyrics and we'll make a record. And I just came up, he played me some stuff and I came up with a story of the last ever lighthouse keeper. And yes, by the Transit Kings on Spotify. Have a listen to it.
I've never heard that. So I'm going to go and give that a listen. So, you've obviously got a very, very deep and varied taste in music. So was that one of the driving forces behind Pern?
Yeah, it was Reese's whole, it was Reese's thing, but we both, you know, I've always loved music, and when we came to write it, it was interesting because he was, it, for him, it was about, let's just sort of not copy Genesis, but we'll make it about Genesis, because I could always did a good Peter Gabriel impression, and he, and we both loved Peter Gabriel. I never was a fan of Genesis, but I like Peter Gabriel for some reason, and he showed me these films of this is Reese, of Peter Gabriel talking about he was on tour and he had to speak to camera. He really looked like he didn't want to do it. And someone said, you've got to promote it, you know. And he'd be going, hello, I'm here in Stuttgart. And the guys, he's just so shy in English. And we just said, let's do this thing. And not, the opposite of Keith Richard, you know, super rich, you know, awkward English person, you know, who doesn't really, who is into his art, but the rest of it he can't deal with. And when we came to write it, I was like, we've got to put this band in. And Reese was like, who are they? You know, he had, because he's much younger than me, he had no sort of knowledge of punk or new wave. It was like, but you know, it was largely Reese, that show. I don't want to say, but I love playing that part, you know. And we had good, really good fun making that. I'm really proud of that as a series, you know. Not many people saw it, sadly. Oh, but
wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
And you like music, you love it, you know, and bands have got hold of it and it's gone on tour buses, you know.
So did you get to meet Gabriel at the end?
Yeah, because Reese invited him to, we went to one of his gigs, and Reese had emailed him and said, can we see you and we saw him before the show, and I was really nervous because I'm taking the piss out of him. It was never, you know, never spiteful what we did, but I met him and I always thought he'd be short because he's very good looking on that picture of So. Some reason I just assumed he was short, and he's tall as me, you know. And I remember I was eating crisps. I dropped my crisps when I met him. And he was like, hello. He goes, you. And he sort of, because I don't think he came and was in the show, you know. I've had people say, oh, you know, of course he says it. He has to say he likes it. Or apparently I heard his missus doesn't like it because, you know, it's a bit taking the mickey, but whatever. He came, he was in the show, so he can't dislike it. I think he was surprised that people thought he was, you know, worth taking it. You know what I mean? He was like, people are interested. But he came on, he was such a lovely guy. You know, he's been in the show, he kills me twice, doesn't he, in two series, if you've seen it. Just a really nice, nice guy.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, Son, what we do is all the songs that we've spoke about, we've put on a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast so people can go and listen to all of your tracks. So I like to sort of say, I guess we're on our way out of this strange lockdown that we're in, but God knows where we're at the moment. But if we're going to stay positive and hope that we are, you know, going to come out of this year with, you know, in a better place, what are you looking forward to about returning to some sort of normality personally, and what have you got coming up and you excited about professionally?
I'm doing a Christmas special of a sitcom in, but you can't mention that apparently because it's BBC want to announce it. I'm kind of doing that. I'm working on another thing, which is a thing called Pennyworth, which is an American origin story, which is on some weird channel that no one can see. But, it's good fun. It pays well. And I'm looking forward to them opening the venues up, really, going to see some bands. I had tickets with my son to go and see Kendrick Lamar live and James Blake and all that, and they just cancelled that. They haven't given us the money back yet. That was last summer. This summer, and just, you know, getting everyone to be able to work again, that's the important thing, you know. In this thing we're doing, we're filming it in February, may not happen, you know. We're filming another series of this thing in February, may not happen. Who knows what's going to happen, but
lovely. Simon, it's been an absolute pleasure talking records with you. Thanks so much time today, mate, and have a lovely week, mate.
And you, mate, see ya.
Thank you. There you have it. Well, great chat. Top fella. Literally went right the way through a multitude of genres there, and they're the kind of chats I like when it pinballs all over the place, you know going from, like, you know, Slade to Terry Farley to Kendrick Lamar. That's a good chat right there. Thanks ever so much for listening. As mentioned at the beginning, please, if you see us on the socials, give us a like, love, a share, a retweet, and all of that gubbins. That's it all goes to to help what is, you know, fundamentally a labour of love. If you do want to support the podcast further, you can do that over on Patreon, patreon.com/offthebeatentrack, where I put up 4 radio shows each week over there, and video episodes and bespoke episodes. So you can support the podcast over there. But yeah, the best thing you can do is just kind of go on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast and subscribe. Leave us a comment. And like I say, if you see us on the socials, give us a little like or a share. That's me done. Have a lovely week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks ever so much. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. And in addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.